news, information, opinions, history, and most importantly, always real. This is Rant EM Radio.
Tonight, the spirit of America lives here in Houston, Texas. On behalf of everyone here in the arena and a worldwide television audience, we would like to extend our condolences to the victims and the families and friends of the victims of the terrorist acts that occurred on Tuesday in New York City and Washington, D.C. Our nation's leaders have encouraged us to return to living our lives the way we normally do. Our nation's leaders have encouraged us to continue to live our lives the American way. They've encouraged us to practice and exercise our constitutional rights. And as such, tonight I believe this is the first public assembly of its size since the tragedy of Tuesday. Make no mistake about what and make no mistake about the message this public assembly is sending to terrorism tonight. And that message, quite simply, is that we will not live our lives in fear. The citizens of Houston are not afraid. The citizens of Texas are indeed not afraid. And by God, the citizens of the United States are not afraid. For we are a proud people, proud of who we are, proud of our nation, and damn proud to be Americans. And we will fight. We will fight for our families. We will fight for our rights. And we will fight for our great nation. America's heart has been wounded. But her spirit shines as a beacon of freedom, a beacon of freedom that never has been nor ever will be extinguished. The World Wrestling Federation would like to thank each and every one of you here in the Compaq Center tonight. The World Wrestling Federation would like to thank each and every one of you watching on television. We would like to thank you for the honor and privilege of performing before you here tonight.
Symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents
the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast
with your hosts,
the Impact Playa, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
ladies, gentlemen, and assorted low lives, your new recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment, broadcasting from the current to the way back. We are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, your gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, and I'm joined by no one. Dave's having some computer issues. He just texted me. I tried to call him like 17 times. I guess he's going to have to reboot and call in. Good evening to everyone. September the 10th, 2013. We are live on Rant Entertainment Media, rantemradio.com. We are a Shining Wizards Network production. And it is what it is. It's Wednesday night. Hello to everybody in the chat room. Mr. X is in there. Nixon. I see Tank. Tony C is in the room, co-host of the Rant every Tuesday night. Good evening to you, sir. I saw some other people in there, too. I thought I saw Nixon in there. Yeah, there he is. I saw Matt in there.
Dead or alive, you are coming with me.
Yeah. Saw a bunch of you animals in there. Thank you for hanging out with us tonight. All right. We got a big show, but we have some announcements. I don't want to make the announcements until Knucklehead calls in, him and his computer problems. I swear, I tell you what, it's been a draining couple of days, and normally this time of year I'm not the nicest of people for obvious reasons, and I mean, I'm not going to beat a dead horse. 13 years ago, my life changed forever, personally and professionally. I saw things very differently after that day. Spending 14 hours down there as a first responder was arguably the hardest thing I had to do, and then a month later losing my father. So for me, now for the last couple of years anyway, I've gotten accustomed to, you know, reflecting. And my peers have been wonderful, and social media has been wonderful, my friends and just my family, and, you know, it's people deal with it different ways. I mean, I remember that day coming back from, you know, being down there, and people were just quitting. People were handing in their badges and their IDs. They were like, I'll never go back out on the ambulance again. And that was sad. As I get mega powers in here, hold on. All right, are you done now?
I'm ready.
What happened, dude?
Everything, as soon as you called me, everything crashed.
Yeah, I thought I did something wrong, because I actually, when I tried like seven times, then I logged off, and then I restarted Skype thinking that it was me again, you know? But it wasn't, thank goodness. I'm glad you're on.
I just have like a ton of shit on my computer right now, so everything's just like going massively slow. So when you called, everything just crashed.
Well, I'm glad you're back on. Hello, sir.
I'm back.
And we're live, Dave.
And we are not afraid.
That's right. That's we are not afraid. And that, thank you for the segue, partner. So, like, you know, for me, anyway, personally, the last couple of years, I've been blessed with a family. I've been blessed with new friends. And I guess, I mean, I was making new friends, and I was connecting with old friends. And every year, a couple of co-workers of mine, we get together and we talk. And, you know, my partner who was with me that day still talks to me. He has a family of his own now, you know. So we every year we just get to, you know, we talk, and we don't, you know, we just, hey, how you feeling? What's going on? Thank God we're here another year. And, you know, that's it. So, I thought, since we're so close to the date and the show falls on the day, well, this is actually anniversary of a couple things, but today in particular, I figured, you know what, let me just play the clip. And I had the clip, and Dave had clips for me to play, and I played those two, and I'm about to play some more later on, and we got a huge show tonight. And well, let's start with you. How you been, Mega Powers? What's been going on in your world?
A lot of things, a lot of incredible change that I'm not going to go into depth on here, because it's a wrestling show.
Well, no, the fans want to know how you're feeling and what's going on. They don't need to know everything about your life.
I'm doing great.
All right, that's all we need to know. As long as you're doing good, White Lightning is in the building, And
Black Hammer's in the chat room.
Black Hammer's in the chat room. And listen, here it is. You know, and like I said, I'm not going to beat a dead horse. I'm not going to cry about it. I mean, I'll probably do tomorrow because I always do for some reason. But I have outlets now. I have social media. I have a great support group, and I have this. This is
well, you know, the events of September 11th have, you know, hit people in multiple ways. You know, it was a something kind of almost unfathomable because, you know, with this country, you know, nothing really happens. There's no wars that happen here. You know, last war that happened here was what, like in the 1700s or so?
Yeah. And
so it's kind of like almost like unbelievable for many. And, you know, it's something that some people are still feeling the repercussions of to this day. And it's not an easy thing. It's just how I worded. This is how humans interact with one another. And, you know, change is something that's needed because it's still stuff that's going on. We're still involved in other countries. Other countries are, you know, warring with one another, and it's all kind of just senseless. So it's
I could tell you that after that happened, I paid attention more to what was going on nationally. I mean, I was always involved locally with politicians, and I'm a lifelong volunteer. So is Tank. Tank's been in a little longer than I have. He's got me beat by a couple of years. But, you know, Tank and I were always involved with, you know, volunteering and with the local assemblymen and congressmen. And we always, you know, we always had causes. We always did fundraisers. So it's like I was always involved locally. But after that day, I can honestly tell you that I paid attention more to what was going on around the world. Not that I didn't care. But, you know, in somebody in my position who had to be there, you know, and that's the thing too. People like, you know, I was getting hits from our buddies over in the UK and all that. And they were like, man, I can't even like sympathize. You know, I can't even sympathize. And I was like, listen, I'm not asking nobody for, you know, for a hug. You know, I'm just saying like I deal with it differently almost every year. But, you know, like I said, this and losing my dad a month later was like, you know, the game changer for me, you know. And I saw things differently. And I kind of grew up a little bit. And I looked at things, you know, a little more half full than half empty. And I wasn't quite there yet. I got better with time and age, obviously. But, you know, Mr. X says he's got a 12-year-old. And my nephew is also 12. And I had said to my sister after that happened, my sister was also a first responder. The thing is, you know, with her son, and I said, you know, Brandon's going to have this in his textbooks in a couple of years. You know,
yeah.
You know, like that's the thing where we read about all the stuff growing up, but that stuff's going to be like in your face, you know, and it's going to be, and you know, I think the pussification of our country, and I don't want to get into politics because politics will bore everybody, but. You know, I think the way it's evolved, there is a bit more awareness of what goes on in the world, and I'm kind of happy about that. And, you know, Dave and I, we kind of agree on a lot of things politically. And, you know, I don't care what goes on in other countries, but when we get involved, we try to police something that's been going on for thousands of years. It doesn't make any sense to me. And it is what it is. But now this is here we are, and now we have this wonderful show, and we have an outlet. And we're going to do some wrestling tonight, man. Make me happy, man. I want to get happy. So let's get happy.
Yeah. And I'm loving the topic tonight because I haven't watched a lot of Nitros. And I don't even remember last time I watched the Nitro.
I was pulling.
And I'm pleasantly surprised by what I've been watching. Like, I really just enjoy – like, I completely forgot, like, how with these shows – you know, granted, it was like the same old guys, but they were like doing something completely different with them. You know, Hogan was doing stuff that Hogan wouldn't normally do. You know, Flair was doing stuff that Flair wouldn't normally do. And granted, you know, it went in all different kinds of directions. But when it first started, it was something special. And it was something that WWE couldn't even touch. You know, they were out of touch, to be quite honest.
Yeah,
and that's what led, you know, WCW to actually, you know, kind of finally getting its act together and producing a television show that was, you know, more in touch with the times, you know, than you know, any other wrestling show. And it created so many wonderful things that we get to enjoy today.
Right. So we'll get into that in a little while. We have some announcements, though, first and foremost. Next Saturday, Dave and I will be in Legends of the Ring in New Jersey. Well, Monroe, Jersey. I can't even talk tonight. Monroe, New Jersey.
Jamesburg Township.
Jamesburg Township, whatever the fuck it's called. Legends of the Ring. Ricky Steamboat. Shining Wizards.
Dave, and I'm bringing a ring bell.
Dave's bringing a ring bell. And then that night, the Rhea family, the Mega Powers, and the Shining Wizards will be at Pro Wrestling Syndicate's return show after taking the summer off.
All fired up, right?
All fired up. Ricky
Just like the Pat Benatar song. That's my favorite Pat Benatar song.
I like – well, I played one last week, didn't I? And that was Joan Jett. That was Joan Jett.
Yeah.
Who sings You Better Run? You Better Run. You Better – is that Pat Benatar?
Better Run.
Yeah, You Better Run. You better hide. Anyway, that's a good song, too. Anyway, so we'll be at All Fired Up. Ricky Steamboat will be there. Brodus Clay, Homicide. Bunch of people, man. What's his face?
Rob Van Dam.
Rob Van Dam will be there. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. So, I mean, bunch of shit. And we're gonna have a blast. And we'll take plenty of pictures. And then it doesn't stop with the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. Next Wednesday, Dave, we can announce this, right? Are we good?
Yeah, we can announce it. It's official.
All right. Next Wednesday night, Little Egypt from Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling will be on the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast.
And this is all because she actually listened to our show.
Yep, she listened to our show. She liked
to,
our show.
Stickman up north.
Good looking out, Stick, Apex Wrestling Entertainment. Good luck. Good luck, good luck, good luck.
It's because of him we can have nice things.
Yes, we could have nice things.
And we got another guest after that.
Yes, next Wednesday, the following Wednesday, Mr. Johnny Mangway will be joining us, or Jocka, of CZW.
Savage.
Now, he's been CZW, like, beyond wrestling, right? Wrestling is fun.
Mainly Chikara and beyond. Mainly beyond. To be quite honest, like, I'm so out of touch with what's happening now, which is perfect for me being on this show.
Right. Well, this year he's been at Beyond. He's been at Wrestling is Fun. He's been at Chikara Pro. He's been at On Point Wrestling, Combat Zone Wrestling, International Wrestling Syndicate. He's wrestled in AIW. He's wrestled in WSU. He's wrestled in Wrestle Jam.
He's been wrestling all around the world.
Jersey All Pro, IWA Deep South, Dragon Gate USA, and WXW. So, and he's a local guy, so he's going to be joining us in studio.
And he's the ride, you know, for the Beyond shows for quite a bit. So that's how I got to know him, and we're going to bring his ass into the show. Actually, he was the first wrestler on the Shining Wizards, and I brought his ass on.
That's right.
And we had ourselves a good old time, and we got drunk. I'm not going to be drinking next week.
Yeah, we can't.
I ain't bringing nothing with me.
No, we're gonna have fun. And he's a local guy. He's actually a neighborhood guy. He's from this neighborhood where I live now.
Yeah.
So he's going to come through. We're going to hang out, and we're going to talk some wrestling, and
We'll see if Chris Dickinson will join with, because, you know, they're best friends since childhood. And Chris is ready to get on. I just got to figure out when, you know, what day he's actually going to come on.
The Dirty Daddy himself. He was on The Shining Wizards a little while ago, too.
And I was on the same show.
That's right. That was your last appearance.
That was my last appearance. I wasn't planning on being there, but I heard Chris was going to be on there. So I was like, hey, let me be on. You know, I haven't seen Chris in a while. So I'm going to get him on the show, too.
Absolutely. All right. And another announcement I want to make. Our podcast brethren, The Midnight Jury, having their 50th episode coming up.
50 years old.
That's right. So I want to wish them a very happy 50th. I'll send them a clip of...
Happy 50.
Yeah. Congratulating them, Sydney, Mike, Adam. And then they got another podcast coming out soon after midnight. So be on the lookout on the Shining Wizards Network. And
if you couldn't get enough of those guys, nah, they got another show coming up.
Yeah, they're doing big things over there in, down
and,
in Philly.
What's it? Mike is doing commentary for Rage Wrestling, right?
Yeah, really good stuff going on. Just again, just keep on with the keep on, man. Keep on listening to the Shining Wizards Network. Keep on listening to the Rant. Everybody's doing big things now coming up. What else is going on? I have some other announcements here. It's Dave Destruction's birthday, man. From Thursday Night Destruction on the Shining Wizards Network. So Big Dave's having a birthday. We'll see him next Saturday night at Pro Wrestling Syndicate. Hopefully that we'll get to have him on the show soon. And that's pretty much it, man. And then we have some news, man. Let's get into some news, shall we?
Yeah, there's a lot of news going on.
All right. So,
world of professional wrestling.
Yeah, let's start with some Ring of Honor. They had their All-Star Extravaganza 6i pay-per-view Saturday night. I did not buy it. I got it the next day. Thank you very much, interwebs. And you want to go over the whole card, or do you want to go over what mainly happened? And
I didn't watch any of it. I to be quite honest, I have very little interest in watching it, other than whatever the good matches are. So
well, there was a couple of good matches.
To do what you need.
Mark Briscoe defeated Hansen from War Machine. Tommaso Ciampa still doing his "I'm crazy" gimmick. Coming out looking to beat up everybody.
He seems to be kind of a normal guy. I don't see what would be so crazy about him.
Yeah, All Ego and The Walking Weapon versus R.D. Evans and Moose and B.J. Whitmer and Adam Page and Caprice Coleman and Watanabe just tore it up in a four-corner survival match. Of course, Bad Influence, Daniels and Kazarian, they beat The Decade. Jimmy Jacobs and Roderick Strong when Kazarian, check this out, he suplexes Strong to Daniels into his boot, giving him the addiction to win. Strong then shakes hands with The Decade, but is not cool with this. But ultimately, cooler heads prevailed in The Decade. So there's some distension among the ranks there. AJ, this probably might be the match of the night. AJ Styles beats Adam Cole with a bloody Sunday from the top rope.
I would love to see that,
dude. I have it now, so I'll send it to you.
Yes, please do.
Maria Kanellis comes out with a trench coat, says Matt's coming back. She takes off a trench coat to reveal Jay Briscoe's that work title he had that Dave Milliken made in a pink fur with Mike and Maria's picture on it of them kissing.
They're getting married soon.
They are. It's called The Title of Love, and then Mark Briscoe comes out and chases him away. Jay Lethal was supposed to fight ACH, but there was an issue with him getting a visa of some sort. I forget the issue.
ACH.
Yeah, they were in Canada. ACH was supposed to fight. He couldn't come.
I was about to say, like, both guys, live in America.
They don't
have a visa to work in their own country.
Right. No. This was in Canada. It was in Toronto.
Okay.
And somebody else had visa problems, too, and I'll get into that in a few minutes. Jay Lethal, television champion, defeats Cedric Alexander. That was a good match. Now, here is the game changer. The next day, my son and I wake up and we open up the results. And I announced it on Facebook that night, but I couldn't see it. So my son and I get up and we read what's going on. Jay Briscoe is the second two-time World Heavyweight Champion of Ring of Honor, beating Michael Elgin with the J Driller. Now, here's what's been going on. Here's what's been circling around. There's been a couple of cryptic tweets by Elgin saying the truth will come out. I'm hearing that his work visa wasn't working. Even though he's from Canada, he couldn't leave the country right quick to defend the title. If they had, when they leave Canada, obviously the next day, he couldn't go. That was one of the rumors. Another rumor is that when he went out to Pro Wrestling Guerrilla for the Bola tournament, he jobbed to one of the up-and-coming guys that are out there. I forgot the guy's name. And that, apparently guys don't Ring of Honor looks down upon their champions jobbing in other feds. I don't know why that's
an issue. I don't completely understand that because it was like a few years ago I did a Beyond event where it was Richards, who was the ROH champion, going against Mengway and Joey Gargano, whatever. And I'm pretty sure that Richards jobbed out to one of those guys at the events. And if it wasn't that, I know he definitely jobbed out while he was ROH champion. You know, I don't in the world of wrestling, you know, the fans, they're not really going to look down upon a lot of these guys, regardless of what title that they have, if they lose in, you know, a certain promotion. It's just part of the game. It's wrestling, you know, even though, you know, whatever's happening in PWG and whatever's happening in Ring of Honor, you know, there's going to be some guys that are following all of this stuff, but there's going to be plenty of guys who, you know, they're not going to make all the time in the world to watch every single thing. Now, and we all know how great these guys are. That's why we keep going to the shows. So if Michael Elgin loses at Bola, you know, so what? AJ Styles lost at Bola too, and he's the IWGP champion. And AJ Styles lost plenty of times during the G1 Climax tournament. So come on, you know, let's ease up a bit. Simmer down now, all right?
Let me ask you something, Mega Powers. Now, yeah. When you and I first hooked up, before you came on the podcast, we were at that Pro Wrestling Syndicate event, and the Briscoes wrestled the Rock and Roll Express, you remember?
Yeah.
Okay. Weren't they the tag champions when they jobbed to the Rock and Roll Express?
I don't recall, but, you know, obviously, you know, the bread and butter is ROH.
Yeah, of course. I don't, and you're totally right on this. I don't understand the big deal.
You know, at the end of the day, ROH, whether they're on TV or not, they're not even, you know, people can call them a number three, but, you know, similar to TNA, being a number two, they're not even close to, you know, scratching the surface of what WWE has.
Right.
And there's just so much wrestling that's happening now, you know, regardless of what we had back in the 70s, 80s, 90s on television, there's still so much wrestling going on.
Right.
And really, you know, if a guy loses at Bola or loses at ROH, it's, in the grand scheme of things, it's not a big deal.
Right.
You know, I've been starting to get hooked on these Nitros. I'm watching one Nitro a night when I can. Because they're an hour. That, for me, like, an hour is perfect. You get, it's enough to kind of, you know, get you clawing back for more, you know? And, you know, Hogan was jobbing to certain guys. Flair was jobbing to certain guys. Luger was jobbing.
Yeah, I totally get your point,
yeah.
Man. I just, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff. And Elgin's not talking. He's just, like, tweeting, like, the truth will come out eventually. And there's something more to it, obviously, because if you didn't have anything to hide, why would you make these cryptic, you know?
Yeah,
and shit,
you know,
like
at
that?
The end of the day, it's let me put it this way: regardless of what ROH, you know, decides, you know, obviously they want to keep their brand prestigious, which is fine. You know, everybody wants to do that. I think, regardless, you know, whether you know how we view it or not, it's just another chapter in the story of professional wrestling, and we're going to still watch and we're going to enjoy what's going to happen. I'm not going to sweat what ROH, you know, does.
No, I know. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, I don't understand if that is the reason. It's just a stupid reason. So
yeah, you know, all of these organizations, they want the fans to be more invested in them than the other promotions, which is common.
Right.
It's just how it's going to be. And regardless of how people think or what, we're still going to watch. We're still going to check it out. As long as, like, good stuff's happening, that's all that matters.
Well, good stuff is happening. Red Dragon retained the World Tag Team Championship, defeating the Young Bucks, picking up the first fall with the Chasing the Dragon on Nick after Kyle O'Reilly hit him with a hockey stick. Bucks take the second fall, pinning Fish with a super kick package pile driver combo after a tandem tombstone on the floor. I can't even talk tonight. I'm a fucking disaster. Bobby Fish pulls the referee out of the ring after the Bucks hit the Meltzer driver. That's pretty funny. Nick accidentally dives onto the referee. O'Reilly makes Nick tap to the cross arm breaker in the third fall. Red Dragon retains. Tommaso Ciampa comes out and attacks the Bucks, and that's how the show ends.
Mm.
All right. Another thing I wanted to get into tonight is Vince Russo. Started his own podcast called The Swerve. If you haven't listened to it, it's okay. I don't want to go into details. He's had a couple episodes so far. I listened to Ed Ferrara last night on the way home from the shitty commute.
Oh, what was the name of his character on WCW?
Oh, he made fun of JR?
Yeah.
Oklahoma.
That's it.
So now Vince Russo comes on Pro Wrestling Radio, and this is a quote. And he goes, "I've been holding back this for years, and I finally got to say, I felt like Hannibal Lecter when he was strapped in and had his mouth wired shut. Spike TV is a speaking of TNA. Spike TV is a horrible partner. Why TNA would ever want to partner with Spike is beyond me unless there was no other option. If Spike TV were the only option to stay on television, when I would understand it. They are a horrible partner. They know nothing about the wrestling business. The way they advertised and marketed the program over the years was absolutely atrocious. I could tell you this from a position when I worked with the USA Network. I worked directly under Bonnie Hammer. She was the female version of Vince McMahon. She knew what she was doing. When you had Bonnie Hammer at USA and Vince McMahon, the sky was the limit. If TNA signs another deal with Spike, great for them. It'll move along another 2 years and everyone will work by it, but the product will not grow on Spike. My hope for TNA is that a new network comes along and embraces TNA and gives them the time and investment to help grow the product. I can't say that's enough. TNA on Spike will never, ever grow." Now, this has been circulating for a couple of days, and then F4W...
Figure Four Weekly?
Yeah. They interviewed Dave Schwartz, who's the senior vice president of communications with Spike, and he said, and I quote, "I want to start by saying we enjoyed a great relationship, a very collaborative relationship with Dixie Carter and her team over the years. We took TNA from a late-night spot on Saturday nights doing 500,000 viewers to a two-hour time slot that did over 2 million viewers over time. Spike went out of its way, not in just adhering to its contract, but going above and beyond. We paid Hogan. We paid Eric Bischoff with our money." And we said this already, Dave. You and I said that already.
Yeah.
"We financed many shows. We financed UK shows. We helped promote them. We gave TNA a primetime spot Thursdays from 9 to 11. I think his comments were way off. Clearly, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's somebody who thinks more of himself than really exists. Vince Russo never meant anything to Spike. He had nothing to do with the negotiations. No one cares about Vince Russo with Spike. No one cares or knows who he is. We have a great relationship with TNA. We went above and beyond again, and they did for us as well. Dixie helped promote our shows. What Vince Russo was saying is complete nonsense." Thoughts?
Well, as the saying goes, you know, there's two sides of the story and then there's the truth. And, each person is the main character in the story of their life. So they're going to view things, the way that they want to view it. And, to my understanding, the folks over at Spike, according to Vince Russo, obviously we don't know anything about what's really going on. We just, know what people tell us. But, supposedly they didn't know that Russo was on the, what's the phrase that I'm looking for? That he was a employee of TNA, and they were operating, without the knowledge that he was on the pay list. And, for Spike, from what we saw, they were doing what they could, but there was also from what I could see, there wasn't really any advertisement for the show. And am I correct in saying UFC is also on Spike, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to take a wild guess and say that...
Oh, no. You said USA is on Spike, you said?
No, UFC.
UFC is on... No, not anymore. No, UFC is on Fox now.
Oh, really?
I stand corrected, yes.
Well, when did that happen?
I want to say 2011.
Oh, okay. So I'm like way, way off of...
Yeah.
But regardless, regardless of what they've been putting into, TNA, Impact Wrestling, it can only go so far. you know, whether they did their best or whether they underperformed. And we can all agree, wrestling is not like the hottest thing happening right now.
No, we
and yeah. even indie wrestling is not a hot thing. It's just something that we all enjoy. It, you know, it persists, it continues on. But we love it. We try to nurture it the best we can. And it just is what it is.
Yeah, I'll say briefly that you know, I mentioned this a few weeks ago, Vince Russo, right place, right time, that kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know, I listened to his podcast, and, like, he kind of contradicts himself. Yeah. He contradicts himself. And his contraindications are like, well, you know, I'm going to come out, and I'm going to shit on this, but I love those guys. Like, he'll shit on WWE. He, like, there's one episode I listened to yesterday. Mm-hmm. He'll shit on the product, but he loves Triple H, and he loves Dolph Ziggler, and he loves so-and-so, but he can't watch it. You know, but I mean, but he constantly shits on the product, and I guess it, to an extent we all do the same thing.
Yeah.
But the difference between us and him is that we never worked for them, we never wrote for them, and he kept going back to the fact that I was a writer, I was a fan, and I was a writer. You know,
yeah.
And if they didn't like something, you know, they told us and blah blah blah. And I mean, it was like, I don't know, kind of leaving himself open for nonsense, and I'll leave it as that.
And I'm pretty sure it's safe to say, you know, things have drastically changed since he was a writer on the show.
Right. I mean, they
and you know, I know guys like Shining Wizards Eddie, you know, and a lot of people, they think, you know, Vince has lost his mind, but you know, WWE has changed so much. You know, regardless of the guy's age, you know, the procedures have changed, the rank and order, and, you know, everybody's, you know, title and what they do now has drastically changed. There's so much that's going on, you know, just from my experience working in film, you know, things go crazy, and a lot of people, they act crazy. It's not just going to be Vince. You know, putting together a television show now has changed, and a lot of things happen on the fly, and a lot of things aren't going to make sense. And it's, you know, it's, you can't really blame people because it's just the nature of the beast. You know, everybody wants to do a great show. They want to have this awesome product, but you can't expect perfection when, you know, there's too many cooks, you know, working together. You know what I mean?
And, you know, he said something, too, which made sense. Like, and getting back to what, like, listen, he said anybody could tell you that they can write this stuff. It's an old thing to have them tell you you can't do it. And I guess that was his way of saying there were so many things that I wanted to do and I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that about Triple H, too. He goes, I'm pretty sure Triple H has had ideas, and they shot him down and all this other jazz. Now, listen, we've all said, our peers have said it, our fans have said it, we could all write this stuff.
Yeah.
You and I have written this stuff. Like, we've sat there and watched things, and Eddie and Matt and Tony and all those other guys, Kevin and the jury guys and some of all, and the rant guys, they've all written in their heads what was going to happen, and they call it.
Yeah.
You know? And then, like, it's an old thing to say that, and then they don't have anybody, we don't have anybody in our ear saying, you can't say that, or you can't do that. So he had some validity to that. But I think now that he has an outlet, this podcast, and now he's not working for anybody, he's in Colorado in a fucking cave somewhere.
Yeah, and he's, you know, an antisocial guy too, and
he's a New Yorker, and I remember his radio show from Long Island, Vicious Vin.
Yeah,
from I remember that AM station. We used to have to at night try to get it at like 2 o'clock in the morning because the antenna wasn't that big, and I was out in Queens.
Mm.
So, but anyway, again, right place, right time. Not everything he did was terrible. I just think he runs his mouth too much. We'll stay on WWE before we go to the break.
Yeah, and real quick, you know, we've heard so many opinions about this guy.
Yeah.
And I think just at this point, you know, we can have as many opinions, you know, we can form our own opinions, you know, from what people say and all that kind of stuff, but we don't know what's going on. It's so confusing to put all this information together and try to make an honest opinion of it. At the end of the day, we're just going to have what these guys say, and we can work from there. And I think at the all we can really, you know, go upon is like, hey, do we like the show or not? And I want to throw this out, you know, real quick. I read this one interview done with what's his name? Shinsuke Nakamura,
right?
In New Japan Pro Wrestling. And this is probably one of the most intelligent interviews I've heard in a while. And the guy basically said, you know, who cares about what's going on behind the scenes? We're all going there to watch the match.
Right.
Because you can it's like this. You go to a restaurant, you're going there for the food. You're not really going there to find out what the head chef or the owner's, you know, personal life is.
Well, that, and we spoke about that in length, yeah, a few times, how it's like, you know, fans have too much access,
yeah,
to all the crap. There's no more kayfabe. Kayfabe is dead.
Yeah.
So now, you know, between being a fan and now being the responsibility as a journalist, I guess we're pseudo journalists.
Yeah.
I think it's a responsibility on our part and anybody else who does a show that, you know, people value your opinion.
Yeah.
People care about what you have to say. And since he was a big part of what went on in the Attitude Era, people are going to listen.
Yeah.
Even good or bad. So, you know, now he has an outlet, so it is what it is.
Yeah, we're always going to be tuning in. It doesn't matter if we like it or not, we're always going to be tuning in.
Just so we don't miss anything and whatever. But, all right, so I didn't see Raw Monday night. I heard it was the drizzling shits.
Yeah, it's
but I do know that our buddy Aaron Neville, Sami Zayn and Tyler Breeze made their Raw debuts.
Oh, nice.
Against Sami Zayn. I'm sorry. It was Zayn and Neville against Tyler Breeze and Tyson Kidd. And I heard they put on a clinic.
That's great.
Yeah. I just I'm glad for them. And I don't know much, but I know I love you.
And anyway, we know they can wrestle.
Tomorrow night, NXT is coming correct with TakeOver 2. Aaron Neville's fighting Sami Zayn and Tyler Breeze.
We're just going to call him Aaron Neville. Fuck.
I am calling him Aaron Neville.
It's
a four-way for the belt. Women's Championship, Charlotte versus Bayley. A Tag Team Championship, The Ascension versus Kalisto and Sin Cara. Hair versus hair match, Enzo Amore versus Sylvester Lafort, and Mojo Rawley versus Bull Dempsey. And I heard Ric Flair is going to introduce Kenta tomorrow night.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be off the hook.
Absolutely.
NXT is going to be the show to watch.
Yeah, when I get home from work tomorrow, I'm going to definitely
I'm going to be glued to my seat for that.
Crack some brews for that.
I'll say it till they stop doing it. That 1 hour format that NXT is doing, it can't be beat for me.
Yeah. Nixon's
wrestling in 1 hour. That's all I need.
Yeah. Nixon's putting up on the page that they were on the main event, the Ascension I'm talking about. I'm sorry. They wrestled, Los Matadores. So the Ascension, nice. And I think the Ascension did some. If this is correct, let me know if I'm wrong. The Ascension were also on a couple of house shows,
too. Nice.
So I mean, all right. We'll stick with the E Night of Champions in 2 weeks. The Usos will defend against Stardust and Goldust. Cesaro versus Sheamus for the U.S. strap. Mark Henry versus Rusev. Poo poo. Kaka.
Is that a title match or no?
No, Nikki Bella versus
I thought Night of Champions was just supposed to be championship matches.
Well, every title is up, but sometimes they have.
Sometimes they've got to throw in some fat guys to wrestle each other.
Yeah, Nikki Bella versus AJ versus Paige for the Divas title, and obviously Cena versus Brock.
Cena.
Yeah,
Warrior Princess.
I was looking at The Miz and I said Cena, so. And Miz is fighting Ziggler for the IC belt. You very active on social media about Ziggler.
Me?
You, yeah. You put some stuff on the page, and I took this clip, and I was like, you know what? I said, I can't disagree with you.
You know, let me put it this way, you know, and I don't know, it's taken me a while to figure this out, like, just how I am. But for me, it doesn't matter whether it's music, wrestling, whatever. I'm very drawn to people that are authentic and they're genuine. It doesn't matter, you know, if they're doing a wrestling character or if it's a punk rock band or whatever. I'm drawn to people that are authentic, and it's not just me, it's a lot of people. And I'm not the biggest fan of Ziggler's, you know, moves and all that. You know, I've said on occasion, like, when he does the zigzag and some other stuff, these are not, like, high-impact moves. You know, they're just, like, catch you real quick and, you know, pin the guy, which is great. It's not going to be for everybody. But I just love how authentic this guy is. You can tell that he's struggling, and he's just kind of laying it out, you know, as it is. And it's kind of like, hey, you know, or just how he interprets what's going on. And it's like he feels, you know, guys like The Miz are just getting things handed to him. I don't really feel that's the case because The Miz has come a long way. And, you know, Shining Wizards Kevin can attest to that. You know, he's a big fan of The Miz. I'm not a big fan of The Miz at all, but I recognize, you know, this guy's put a lot of effort into his character. And, you know, basically went from being the MTV reality TV show guy to where he is now. Well, and the guy's main evented a WrestleMania. Guys don't get thrown a WrestleMania main event for nothing. But granted, you know, people are going to respond to his work ethic differently to Ziggler's work ethic. My bad.
Yeah, nobody can talk tonight. It's one of the...
Yeah, it's just how it is. Yeah. But, but when you watch it, when you watch this guy's matches, you know, one of the things that sticks out for me is that match that he had with what's his face?
Which one? There's a bunch of them he did well.
Oh, my God. Why am I forgetting this fucking guy's name? Big E.
Oh, Big E Langston. Yeah, either way. Yeah,
there we go.
This clip is probably one of my argument to why he should be the face of the franchise. Just listen to this.
You now know you will be defending the Intercontinental Championship against The Miz at Night of Champions. Coming off of a win like this against Cesaro, does that set the tone for you for what will be happening at Night of Champions?
This match certainly sets the tone for everything that's happened to me in my entire career. I fought hard. The WWE Universe was behind me every step of the way as I scratched and clawed and found a way to win against Cesaro, who is someone, if you didn't know him, you would respect everything he's done in this business, but I can't stand the guy. And I found a way to squeak out a win in classic Ziggler fashion. I stole the win, stole the show, and got the crap beaten out of me after the match. Every single night I've ever been in this business, whether it's crap literally being dumped on me, figuratively, or me getting barrage of fists and bro kicks and kicks to my face, I've always come back. And somehow, someway, I found a way to become the Intercontinental Champion. This means more to me than anything. You know why? Because now I have it. I don't care about the cliches of targets on your back, people gunning after you. What I want to do is make this mean what the prestigious title used to mean. It used to mean you were the workhorse. It used to mean you were the man about to be the man in this business. And my entire career, I've been one step away from being the man that I know. And the WWE Universe knows that I am. Night of Champions, I face Miz, someone, if you look on paper, I outrank, outclass, outmaneuver, and out everything. Yet somehow, someone who's been handed things along the way, titles, WrestleMania main events, movies, you name it, and now a stuntman slash assistant. I've done everything on my own. I always will. And another thing I'll always do is come out on top one way or another. See you at Night of Champions, Miz. And I already feel bad for you. Thanks, Eden.
See? That
exactly.
Exactly. So,
you know, from a wrestling perspective, it's just old school as shit.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, he's putting over the championship. He's putting over his opponents. And he's giving a reason for people to watch his match. Plain and simple.
Yeah.
And it's authentic. It's genuine. If people want to call it kayfabe or not, you know, it's a storyline. the guys throwing in so much reality into it, you can't ignore it.
All right. All right. We don't have any Facebook questions this week.
I think we had like one or two, but they just got caught up in
nonsense
answering that one question.
Right. All right. So listen, take a quick break. Plug our friends. Come back. We have a kick-ass rollback for you tonight. I'm excited. Dave's excited.
Oh, yeah.
Did some homework. Broke out the network. Had some downtime a little bit. And we're going to kick some ass for you guys. We are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. We are live on the Rant EM Radio Network. We are a Shining Wizards Network production, and we will be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
In trying to make an artistic statement, one should be careful not to let one's personal aroma do the talking. In order not to offend the critics, I recommend Rygar's Sports Stick. It provides maximum protection and the freshest scents, a sublime palette of odoriferous emanations. After all, a true artiste should be remembered for his inspiration, not his perspiration. Rygar Sports Stick. Anything less would be uncivilized.
There are many ways you can support the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Go to iTunes, search the Shining Wizards Network and Rant Entertainment Media. Leave a review. While you're there, check out all the other fine programming we have. We're on Stitcher. We're on Buzzsprout. We're on Geek Life Radio every Saturday evening. What are you waiting for? Check us out. You want to email us, turnbuckletrowbacks1@gmail.com. We're on Twitter at TBuckleTbacks. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/turnbuckletrowbacks. Join the group that we have as well. And we have T-shirts, kids, T-shirts. Go to prowrestlingtees.com/turnbuckletrowbacks. We have three designs, the original logo, the NES cartridge parody logo, and the British-inspired World of Sport Shining Wizards Network Turnbuckle Throwbacks T-shirt. It's the Rant. It's the Shining Wizards Network. It's the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. It's entertainment here.
What's up? It's Mike from The Midnight Jury. The Midnight Jury is a podcast where you, the listener, are able to be transported back to the 80s and 90s every Friday to talk about everything pro wrestling, pop culture, and horror. From segments such as My Five Fun Facts in Under 2 Minutes and Adam's Finally Rediscovered, to past guests such as Jake the Snake Roberts, Buff Bagwell, and the horror icon, Chucky himself, Ed Gale, you will find yourself going back to the days before iPhones and social media, to when it was all about records, Walkmans, arcades, and malls. Find us on Facebook and Twitter and join myself and my co-host Adam every Friday on The Midnight Jury. Available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Audioboo for the Shining Wizards Network, and Fridays at 5-4 Central to start your weekend on Geek Life Radio. ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. Entertainment here.
G'day folks, AJ here. When you've finished listening to this fucking podcast, head on over to iTunes or Stitcher and check out myself, Lee and Punch on the fucking Bloke Show.
We talk about a whole variety of topics like comics, cartoons, movies, television, and sports.
And we're often joined by guests like Deck from Ireland and other friends from all over this wonderful planet.
Once a month, we jump into the DeLorean and take a look at the history of professional wrestling.
And once a month, we look back at actual history with Twit, This Week in Time.
And once a month, we talk about whatever the fuck we want to talk about.
So please follow us on Twitter at TBSPOD.
And talk to us in the Facebook group, The Bloke Show.
And I don't give a fuck what you cunts do, just listen to this fucking thing.
This is the Black Scorpion, and when I'm not looking for Sting, I'm listening to the Shining Wizards podcast, shiningwizards.com. Be a mark, buy the shirt, I'm coming for you, Sting.
everyone, this is Justin Anderson, one of your hosts from the Inconclusive Breakdown Podcast, where each week we break down the news in the world of geek culture, entertainment, professional wrestling, sports, and music. We also give our spin on the typical top 10 lists and fan cast our own movies. That's the Inconclusive Breakdown Podcast, available on iTunes, Stitcher, or download from inconclusivebreakdown.libsyn.com.
Hey, Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. As soon as you're done with our show, head on over to rantemradio.com. That's right, rantemradio.com. For such awesome programming as The Rant, every Tuesday night with AA and Tony C, every Wednesday night live with Turnbuckle Throwbacks with myself and the Mega Powers. You have Mr. Will.i.am Morgan every Saturday evening with the Wrestling Call-In Show with Rage. And, of course, you got Jordan Surfer every Sunday for the What Are You Reading comic book show with a new time every Sunday at 5 p.m. with a special appearance by the Lex Experience on a weekly basis as well. It's the entertainment you love, the history you crave. It's The Rant. RantEMRadio.com.
This is Will from Tattoos and Touchdowns, and you're listening to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast.
I just stuffed my face. We're back. Yeah, wife brought home some dinner from the fundraiser.
Oh, nice.
Dope. All right. So let's get into our throwback tonight, huh? Shall we?
It's a Nitro party.
It is a Nitro party. Holy, I'm still playing Nitro. I love that. I love the intro though. It was fun.
Yeah, like for me. I loved it so much more than the Raw intro. And the Raw intros are all been classic.
Well,
but
the Anthrax Raw was fucking awesome. So
which one was the Anthrax one?
Dun, 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 in your eye.
Oh, that was Anthrax?
That's Anthrax, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, all right, let's get into it, baby.
And now, here is your throwback of the week. Sponsored by the Shining Wizards Network and Rant EM Radio.
All right. So, I'm on this WCW kick as well as Dave. All
right. Yeah.
All right. So
this holds a special place in my heart because I was a huge WCW fan at the time because I was a big Hogan mark, and when Hogan made the switch over to WCW, so did I. I was still watching WWF, but you know, as discussed on these recent Monday Night War documentaries, WCW, regardless of how people felt about the Dungeon of Doom and, you know, Booty Man and all that, they were, you know, really tapping the pulse of, you know, what wrestling was to become with Nitro and a lot of their programming. And WWF was seriously lacking at the time, especially '95 with King Mabel and Diesel as champion.
Yeah. Sad. Very sad. All right. Well, Monday Nitro ran from September of '95 to March of 2001. Obviously, production ceased after shortly after WCW was purchased by, of course, the E, right?
Yeah.
The debut of Nitro started the Monday Night Wars. Ratings between the E and WCW lasted for almost 6 years and saw each company resort to, I guess, cutthroat tactics, you want to call it that?
Yeah, it got out of control, and, you know, I feel a lot of the fans, you know, feel the same way. You know, things got, you know, a little crazy with the gimmick matches and, you know, Attitude Era antics.
Right.
And, you know, I think wrestling is still suffering because of just trying to get fans to watch the TV show And it got far away from what wrestling was, you know, all about and what drew fans into watching wrestling.
In mid-96, obviously Nitro got better ratings because of the NWO storyline.
Yeah.
But tonight starts it all. Tonight is September 4th, 1995, from the Mall of Americas in beautiful downtown Minneapolis, Minnesota, home to my favorite fucking football team, the Minnesota Vikings. Now, Ted Turner wanted wrestling to be showcased on his networks. At the time, Eric Bischoff was getting bigger in power, and they said, Eric, what can we do to compete with Vince McMahon? Eric Bischoff said, give me a primetime spot. Ted said, not only will I give you a primetime spot, but I'll give it to you on my TV network, which is TNT.
Yeah.
And now, not only are they live, well, not only are they competing with WWE, but now they're live.
And for fans, especially people that are not in the U.S., you know, a lot of people know, like, the Saturday Night Show was on WTBS. And, you know, what's the difference between TNT and TBS? Well, TNT had more, like, original content, whether they had, like, made-for-TV movies or specifically the NBA was on TNT. So that was, like, a prime, you know, network, you know, if you want to take CNN out of the question. Totally, you know, two different things. You know, Turner was, like, the top guy that was ruling cable television. So if you had a, you know, primetime slot on a Turner network, especially if you're original content, that's a huge deal.
If you're an NBA fan like myself, I know Tony C is, as I stuff my face, I don't care.
Yeah.
NBA is still on TNT.
Yeah.
And, all right, so now they're live, and
WWF was kind of like, it was doing it like 1 week and then, you know, another week it wasn't live. And then I think it got to a point where Raw was becoming so expensive to do, you know, live that they were doing them pre-taped.
Right.
Turner's budget is a lot bigger than Vince McMahon's budget. So they were able to do a live show every week.
So they had the first Nitro in the middle of the mall. The first thing I noticed is
a great train store.
Well, that which is non-existent anymore because they had one out east over here on Long Island, in the suburbs of New York City, and service merchandise.
Oh my God, I remember those catalogs.
Yeah, anybody who lived on the Northeast, I don't know if you guys had them anywhere else, but service merchandise was, like Dave said, it was a catalog company.
But they had stores, too.
But they had stores that you can order stuff from the catalog, and you waited in a lobby-type thing, and they would have this conveyor belt and bring all your shit out to you. So that was pretty
cool. You could order WWF LJNs through service merchandise.
My mom got me Macho Man from service merchandise with Miss Elizabeth. Yep, I'll never forget that, because she had gotten one of our relatives had like a JCPenney card. My mom like maxed it for Christmas, buying us all the shit off of JCPenney.
Yeah.
But she couldn't get Macho Man in the catalog, so she went and got it on service merchandise.
Which, you know, just goes to show how things have quickly changed. Like, we used to order stuff from merchandise. We used to have the friggin' Columbia House Penny CD Club. And now it's just like we order stuff online and it comes to our house. We don't even have to leave the house.
True that. So they have this match in the middle of a mall, I guess just to advertise. I don't think people had to pay to see this.
No, which was a WCW staple of doing free shows. But to their credit, it worked because, hey, WCW in a lot of people's eyes, you know, was like an up-and-coming organization. It wasn't that old, you know. WCW technically started in 91, so this is 95, so it's only been 4 years. WCW's been in existence, and you know, everybody knows who Hulk Hogan is. You know, everybody knows who Macho Man, Lex Luger, Ric Flair, because they were all in WWF, and you know, Sting to an extent. And to have those kind of caliber guys in a mall wrestling, granted, a lot of people thought it was cheesy. to me, and I'm sure a lot of other people, it's like, it's a live show. They're in a mall. Like, the atmosphere has completely changed. It's an interesting dynamic to use. And you knew that the show was going to be live next week. And it's like, where are they going to have it next?
All right. Well, it was exciting for a few reasons. One, because the buzz that was around it. I remember going to a buddy's house down a block, and I was like, I can't believe they're doing this. Like, it's live. And, like, you're thinking, like, anything could happen because it's live, and you don't know.
And just throw this out there. It just popped into my head. WWF was preempted that week.
Preempted, and one of their biggest stars just gave up on his contract days before. Like, I think
the contract was up the – was up the day before, yeah.
Right, so the plan was nobody knew.
He did a house show the day before.
Right, he did the house show was the day before, but he already spoke to them prior, and Sting was the one who, you know, I guess planted the seed, because they wanted no part of him. They wanted no part of Luger. We'll talk about Lex Luger, obviously.
Yeah.
So Sting called up Eric Bischoff, and he was like, listen, he goes, bring Lex back. He's done with his contract. He did all his dates.
He's my best friend.
He's my best friend. And all of a sudden, Bischoff's like, I have no interest in him. But then he saw gold, and I'll get into that in a second. Bischoff is your commentating team, Bobby the Brain Heenan, and god-awful Steve Mongo McMichael.
I hated Steve Mongo McMichael back then. I hated him from the beginning to the end, but now that it's all over, I can watch it through new eyes, and I actually appreciate him being on the show.
Dave, I was 21 years old, and now I'm 40, and I still hate Mongo McMichael. Couple of guys have grown on.
Forgive.
No, a couple of guys have grown on me throughout the years. I respected their game a little better. Like, I mean, I'm not going to get into how many guys that have turned me off, but then I got into them and I dug their character. But I gave nothing. I hated fucking Mongo McMichael. He was awful.
Guys like Flair and Arn, like they all respected the guy.
Well, because he was those guys loved football. Every time Ric Flair cut a promo back then, he made football references. As a matter of fact, he made a football reference on episode 2. We'll get into that in a little while.
Especially those boxer shorts that he was always wearing.
Right, but they idolized football players. And Mongo was one of the best ones ever.
Yeah.
But good football player, terrible fucking ring announcer. A terrible commentator.
Well, you know, the guy got his start commentating on wrestling on Raw.
I know.
Leading up to WrestleMania for LT versus Bam Bam.
I fucking hated him. I did. I'm sorry, Dave. I tried. I mean, like, I thought maybe if I watch it again, I'm like, maybe it's hokey, it's funny. No, dude, he is terrible. Tony C, I'm sorry. And he was a terrible horseman. Anybody in this chat room, anybody on the download, anybody can justify him being a horseman? You're going to compare him to guys like Barry Windham?
Man, he's the second greatest U.S. champion of all time.
Who is?
Mongo.
Yeah, you guys are on PCP because the lineage of that U.S. title goes way beyond god-awful Steve Mongo McMichael. Okay, you talk about U.S. champions, you talk about Ric Flair, Greg Valentine, Magnum T.A., Tully Blanchard, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes.
All in the shadow of Mongo McMichael.
You guys are fucking delusional. Let's get into the first match. Flying Brian Pillman versus Jushin Thunder Liger.
And this was a smart move because, and this was also going to, this was foreshadowing the undercard for many Nitros and pay-per-views for WCW.
Yeah,
what a brilliant move to bring back Jushin Thunder Liger and Flying Brian to rekindle their feud from 92.
From 92, yeah. A couple of things here, too. Wait a minute. Tony C says Sid is the worst horseman. Sid and Mongo are neck and neck. Neck and neck. And then Luger.
So where do you put Paul Roma?
Paul Roma is third, Luger's fourth. If I had to go four worst horsemen of all time, it's Mongo, Sid, Paul Roma and then Lex Luger. And that's it. And that's the bottom line. But Pillman and Jushin Thunder Liger rekindle the feud. They worked perfectly together.
This was more or less, this was like a face versus face match.
Right. One of them were coming back off an injury, right? Wasn't Pillman coming back from the injury? One of them were badly injured. I forget which one it was.
I'm pretty sure it was Pillman because he always had like some sort of reoccurring injury.
Right.
And he came back recently, and it was kind of like a they didn't know where to place the guy. They were hyping up this cruiserweight division literally for 2 years.
And
like, the cruiserweight division was still on the way. Like they were hyping it like I think in like 94, and it was already 95, and nothing was really happening. It was just this kind of like buzz, and nobody knew what was going on with it. And Pillman was one of those guys that they brought back, and you know, they were doing some like heavy promos for the guy. They were like doing promos of him like trying on those like god awful clothes that he was wearing to the ring.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like, well, where's this going? So, you know, still at this point, like it was still kind of like uncertain of what are they going to do with this guy? But regardless of, you know, the lack of foresight, which was going to change really quick for Pillman.
Right.
Still, this opening contest was off the hook. Like, Liger today is still amazing.
Yeah, and he's 50
years old. He's having matches that are just as good as this now.
He's 50 years old. I'm sorry, Tony. I forgot about Kendall Windham. We'll put him above Luger. So, he'll be 5, Luger 6.
Yeah, I hardly even remember Kendall Windham. Yeah, so that's how bad he was.
I absolutely love the match of Pillman and Liger. Pillman wins with a reverse roll-up. And then shakes the hand of Liger. You know, again, face, like Dave mentioned, yeah. Face versus face. The commentators couldn't call half the moves.
Yeah, well, you know, still at the at this point in time, you know, Lucha was not an integral part of WCW. They didn't have Mike Tenay there to call all the moves.
That's true.
Regardless of WCW's affiliation with New Japan, you know, they didn't know, you know, what the moves were being called, you know, over there. They just knew it was fucking good, and they just kind of, you know, it was similar to WWF. There was like a lot of stuff that was going on in WWF. Like there was power bombs very sparingly in WWF, and they weren't calling them power bombs. They were calling them like, oh, he dropped them on his back. You know,
it was for me.
It was revolutionary for its time, and they were just. You know, basically, the mindset was like, this is something that's not happening on WWF. We're establishing our own brand. These guys are fucking awesome. Let's put them on as the opening contest.
And I'm going to go on record, and I'm sure my WCW guys on the rant and on the Shining Wizards Network can agree with us, that this match set the tone, like Dave mentioned, for all the other undercards for Raw. I mean, I'm sorry, for Nitro and their pay-per-views and even some of their syndicated shows, but more importantly, Nitro. After that, Sting cuts a promo on Ric Flair, hyping up his match, his U.S. title match against Ric Flair. And they go to commercial break. They come back. Eric Bischoff is at Pasta Mania at the mall.
Oh, my God.
Which was a failed Hulk Hogan franchise with Jimmy Hart. And he cuts a promo on his opponent this particular night, which would be Big Bubba Rogers.
Bubba.
Right. And then, of course...
But I want to throw this out real quick with that Hogan promo because, you know, Hogan at the time, you know, fans were becoming lukewarm with the guy. Because, you know, for one, you know, the big complaint with WCW was that it's just old WWF guys, but to Eric Bischoff and WCW's credit, they were taking these like established, you know, quote unquote old guys from the WWF, but they were still establishing them as top guys. Like when you watch that promo with Hogan at Pasta Mania, it's packed with kids. So it's not just a matter of he's old, but he's still relevant and people still care about him. And he has his own fucking restaurant. Like, regardless of what you think, they're still establishing in people's minds, like, the guy's relevant. He's still a big deal.
and just by
which is more important than calling him old or whatever, because people are going to do that anyway. People were calling him old before then.
Yeah, of course.
People, like, when the guy won the belt, people were complaining that the guy was bald. So
right, who cares? But I mean, again, it wasn't that hokey. I mean, like you said, there was a guy. Bischoff's vision was starting to come to fruition. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was, you saw what kind of party that was about to go down. You know what I'm saying? And watching this now, again, 20 years later, you clearly see the seeds are planted, you know?
It's still fresh.
Right. Absolutely.
And I'm like just as, big of a critic as you and everybody else, that's a wrestling fan is. And, it's still fresh. Like, Hogan on this show is cool. And you can see, regardless of, how hokey it was and all that, they still made him a big deal.
Yeah.
They were still using, the wrestling tactics that aren't really being used that much these days, which is showing why wrestling is just kind of like in this state of flux right now.
Nixon says, pasta from Pasta Mania got me sick. I had diarrhea for days from it.
I'm sure it did.
Nixon, as a Italian-American from Brooklyn, New York, I can honestly tell you that if any of my relatives caught me eating any of that stuff, they would not only disown me, but they would probably give me diarrhea themselves.
I'm pretty sure it was like Chef Boyardee, plus one or something like that.
Right, right.
It's like, hey, let's open up the plastic bags and pour out these Hulkaroos.
Right. So let's go to the commercial break and come back. And U.S. title match is versus Ric Flair. I still hate Mongo as he tries to bury. This is the best. I still hate Mongo because now he's trying to bury the WWF and Bischoff cuts him off. This is better than you know. And he goes, no,
you
don't
know
say
who
it. You don't say it. Don't say it, and he cuts him off, and I'm like, you know what? I would respect him if it didn't sound so fake and scripted, and in the chat room they're talking about charisma. First of all, don't compare Mongo to Malenko and Benoit and Jarrett, because first of all, Jarrett shouldn't even count it, but that's just my opinion. That's first of all. Second of all, Benoit Malenko didn't cut promos, and you didn't need anybody else to have charisma because you had the second best charisma man on the planet, and that's Ric Flair next to Dusty Rhodes. Okay, so don't feed me charisma. Okay, we had it with Nature Boy. We didn't need.
And a lot of those guys didn't need the charisma
because you had Ric Flair, dude. Ric Flair was your mouthpiece. Ole Anderson didn't have charisma. Arn Anderson didn't have charisma. Barry Windham didn't have charisma. Jesus Christ, Sid Vicious had nothing. But, I mean, you see what I'm talking about.
Sid was just like a loose cannon. For me, it made sense if the guy just said random shit because Psycho Sid didn't, that was part of why people enjoyed Sid because he just said random shit and he got caught up in his words.
But clearly you could tell that a lot of stuff that Mongo was saying was scripted. Yeah. Like, the stuff that he made, and I'll get into more of his crap in a little while, but I wrote down, I still hate Mongo as he tries to bury WWF and Bischoff cuts him off. Then Luger walks out to ringside, smiles and walks away. Crowd goes bananas. Bischoff acknowledges that the total package is in the building. Lex looks really good at this point, too, man.
Yeah, and, for Lex, he's literally coming out of nowhere from the WWF. So when people are watching this, it's like, wasn't this guy just on Raw, whatever the most recent show was? And I'm sure there's fans that were at that, live show on Sunday, and they're like, watching Lex Luger, do his All-American thing. And then on Monday he's on Nitro. What's the big deal? What happens?
Dude, everybody in the room walked out that night at my buddy Jay's house. We all said, holy shit.
I'll say this. When that went down, I was losing interest in Lex Luger because the guy lost his opportunity as world champion. He was kind of floundering with that Allied Powers tag team. I still enjoy the Allied Powers, but it was just kind of like, these guys aren't going to win a championship anytime soon. And it's like, what are they going to do with these guys? Like, nothing was happening with Lex Luger. He was still over. But he was just kind of there.
Yeah, Lex was totally jacked. Tony, she's right.
Yeah. So to have him come
was gold.
Nitro, that was like a huge boost. Like his stocks went through the roof. He mattered.
I'll go on record as saying that turning Hogan heel and bringing in Savage and Lex Luger for the time was Bischoff's best moves. Not even Hall and Nash. And I love Scott Hall. I hate Kevin Nash. But not even bringing the outsiders in. I think bringing in Savage and Lex for the time was genius. Okay?
Yeah. We'll get to that because that's a focal point at the end of the episode.
Yes, exactly. This match was sloppy. And Sting and Flair normally put on clinics.
I was gonna echo that sentiment too, and for me at least, I felt Flair and Sting, you know, lost their touch after that Clash of the Champions, the very first one, because I'm not a fan of the Great American Bash 90 match. I felt it was just like way too one sided, and you were there at the Meadowlands title change,
Title Six. Yeah, that was a good match.
I wasn't there, but you know, from what little clips I saw, I wasn't too convinced by the ending of it. But
no. But it was a good match. It was one of those things where we talked about, you know, how they WCW would always have these over the top matches with the shitty endings, almost like what New Japan does.
Yeah, the way that I felt with Sting and Flair for this match in particular was very paint by numbers, you know, Sting Flair match, like the 10,000 gorilla press slams, the 10 punch in the corner, the no selling of the suplex.
Right, I got that written down too.
Yeah, Sting no selling the chops. It was just like this is it's a typical Sting Flair match. It's not like the worst thing ever, but it's what's expected of them. It's kind of like, you know, these guys have wrestled each other so many times at this point.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure, you know, Nitro's an hour. They can't go for, like, 20 minutes. They only got, like, that 10.
Yeah, but still, dude, 13. It was sloppy, missed spots. Yeah. Commentators aren't even calling these moves. AA Arn Anderson comes to ringside, who recently had a falling out with Flair.
Yeah.
Comes in the ring, breaks up a figure four after the bell rung, and rounded off on Ric Flair.
And this was huge because Arn was Flair's right-hand man.
Yeah.
So Uncle Arn was, you know, inseparable from Ric Flair.
That's true.
So, you know, the supposed cousins, the storyline cousins. And to have this go down on the first episode of Nitro, I was like, this is huge. It's like,
oh, yeah.
Who would have ever thought that these guys were going to face each other? And they would go on to have three matches in WCW that were televised that were really friggin' good. And I'm sure we'll get down to them like down the road.
Right, we will.
But this was just like the turn of like why WCW was becoming noticeable. It's like why WCW is becoming like bigger than the WWF. They just started doing stuff that nobody was expecting. And now this was one of them.
Right. And mark out moment number two for me personally. I was a big fan of back then. I was a huge fan of tape trading from Japan. And yes. Scott Flash Norton, who I love. Scott wasn't over the top. I loved him. For some reason, I liked his look. And he was good in New Japan.
Yeah.
Scott Flash Norton comes out to ringside looking for a fight. Calls out Bischoff. Calls out Mongo, which I was hoping he'd punch Mongo in his face. And then he calls. And then the Macho Man, out of nowhere, comes out and answers the call. Says, yeah. You want a fight, brother? You're going to have a fight. And then they break that up. Doug Dillinger comes out and all the other guys.
Yeah, the useless head of security. Most intimidating guy ever who's head of security.
And then a vignette of the incoming Sabu is played prior to the commercial break.
Who the hell thought that was going to happen?
No, Sabu that and WCW. Mark out moment number three for my buddy.
And this was still
the heyday of ECW, yeah.
This is still a time in WCW where, you know, the Dungeon of Doom was around. Booty Man was right around the corner.
Don't get me started.
You know, things weren't completely solidified. But specifically when you watched Nitro, things were real.
Yeah. So the vignette of Sabu was played prior to the commercial break. Now they come back to Mean Gene, who's in the ring. And he says, because he's back in his home state, he says he could have bought 10 acres of land for $17,000 back in 1953. Of course, he was only 8 years old at the time. Mean Gene then announces the winner of the WCW Harley Davidson sweepstakes, which is Mike Hill from Cullman, Alabama.
I wonder if Mike Hill ever cashed in on that.
Well, Mike Hill won a 1995 Harley Davidson Softail motorcycle. Bischoff announces Johnny B. Bad versus Dirty Dick Slater, Sting and Savage versus the Blue Bloods on WCW Saturday Night, and then he play a vignette of VK Wall Street. And he cuts a promo mentioning the new generation, which was the WWF tagline.
Yeah.
VK Wall Street, obviously Vincent K. Wall Street. It's a knock on him. They go to commercial break and they come back, and now it's your main event. Big Bubba Rogers versus Hulk Hogan for the WCW Heavyweight Championship. I loved the Hogan sucks and the Hogan is a wimp signs at ringside.
Yeah, it was happening. It was like, you know, regardless of Hogan's status, you know, the red and yellow was getting boring for a lot of people.
I was a big fan of
it. And thankfully, Eric Bischoff understood that. And things were going to change very quickly.
Yeah, again, this is groundbreaking stuff, guys. This is like it blew my mind that A, they got a primetime spot, and B, it was friggin' live. That was just beyond amazing at this point. Now it is competition. And they replayed it at night. So you know how my bag was. I used to watch Raw and tape Nitro. You know, that's how I kept them on a videotape, and I still have a whole boxes of them downstairs. That I'll convert eventually. And, you know, so this wasn't a bad match. Hogan and Boss Man have a chemistry. I mentioned that months ago when they fought in the cage in the garden when he was, back in the day, like 4 or 5 years prior when I was at that wonderful house show, that afternoon house show in the garden when he superplexed him from the top of the cage.
Yeah.
And hard-weighed him. But they had a good chemistry. And Hogan has this niche of certain guys he hooks with, and this was no different. He was, again, responsible for bringing guys like him in. So they had a good match. Hogan gets the win. As he celebrates with his, you know, with his flex, he's ambushed by the Dungeon of Doom, who is Kevin Sullivan, Kamala, Earthquake, who's now Shark, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, Jesus Christ, I cringe when I think about this. Brutus Beefcake is now the Zodiac.
Yeah.
Right. It was just fucking terrible. Fucking
terrible. Let me throw this out there, because a lot of people wondered, you know, why was this happening? Why was there a Dungeon of Doom? And, you know, a lot of people love watching it just because it's so ridiculous. But the whole point, and was it a friend of mine turned me on to a Kevin Sullivan shoot, and Kevin Sullivan was the booker at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, people were wondering, like, you know, WCW was always known as, like, a workers' organization. And, you know, occasionally they would do the gimmick stuff. And the gimmick stuff just didn't work. And it usually was, you know, regulated to, like, the Ding Dongs or was it Brad Armstrong was doing the Candyman.
Arachnaman, Mr. JL.
Yeah, but all that stuff was, like, they weren't even mid-carders. They were just, like, the jobbers, you know, so it didn't interfere with, you know, the mid-card. Sometimes it interfered with the mid-card, and sometimes it interfered with the main event, but not to the point where it was, like, completely damaging to the company, because WCW, you know, it wasn't Jim Crockett Promotion anymore, but WCW was just kind of, like, it just was what it was. Like, it was adjusting from JCP to the Jim Herds and all the other weird owners. You know, just trying to get its footing again. But, like, the gimmick stuff was, you know, like I said, it was just relegated to a lot of the opening guys, and it didn't go anywhere.
Right.
But still, like, the heavy hitters, the workers, were the main focus. But it was kind of strange. It's like, well, how come this is happening? How come they're bringing over Hogan's, like, buddies from WWF? And it was quite simple, and I kind of want to smack myself on the head as to why this was happening. And it was Kevin Sullivan's way of appeasing Hogan, because Hogan's used to the cartoony shit. And, you know, think of it this way, you know, you own this company and you're bringing in a major client, you want to make that guy or gal, you know, happy so they continue to work with you. So you can continue having your job and make your company, you know, as big as possible. So they landed a huge deal when they had Hogan in there. So as a way to make Hogan happy, they did the cartoony stuff because it wouldn't make sense for, you know, Hulk Hogan to go against, I don't know, Steven Regal or whatever, you know, because Hogan wasn't going to have these worker matches. He was going to have Hulk Hogan matches.
Right.
So they threw together, you know, they had Flair. They did the dream match. They exhausted that, you know, they retired Flair, brought Flair back.
That blew its wad. That blew its wad way before Hogan was getting into his groove. So
absolutely. But, so just to make Hogan happy, they did the Dungeon of Doom. But, you know, in the meantime, they're still doing the worker stuff. You know, they're bringing in the Malenkos. They're bringing in Benoit.
Yeah, but, you know, as hokey as the Dungeon of Doom was, they were very instrumental in bringing in Paul White.
Yeah.
So that was
a Hogan find.
That was a Hogan find, right. So, again, I love Kevin Sullivan. A matter of fact, Mr. X sent us something while we were broadcasting with Kevin Sullivan was just on MLW's podcast. But I can't, obviously, I can't play it, but Kevin Sullivan for me on so many different levels is one of my all time favorites, and I still want to do the Florida stuff with him. I still want to do a lot of stuff about when, you know, he has so many things.
Purple Haze,
I summon thee, and then the Varsity Club, which was way ahead of its time at that point.
Yeah.
Again, this is like Dave said, it was to appease the Hulkster. It worked. I hate Brutus Beefcake, so for me, I love Kamala, always loved Kamala.
Yeah.
But
it was just kind of like you knew these guys were going to lose. And,
right, yeah. They were all role players, and that's fine. And this was.
But they weren't top guys, and it's like, you know, like we talked about, like, endlessly, you know, back in the 80s, they threw guys like Morocco, Big John Studd, Andre the Giant, Kamala. When Kamala was still a threat, and it's like. You know, who's going to be the guy that's going to take out Hogan? But these guys were all serious threats. Now it's kind of like, well, we've seen all of these guys lose to Hogan, so why should we care?
Right.
And but again, it was to make Hogan happy. But I will say this, you know, the Dungeon of Doom beatdown brought down the question of like, okay, everybody was beating up on all of us, but you know, they didn't touch Luger. You know, what's the deal with that?
Right, this was setting up the War Games Fall Brawl match, which was the week prior.
Yeah.
So, you know, Lex makes the save and then comes face-to-face. Sting and Savage come in to break it up. They go to a commercial. Mean Gene gets in the ring. The Fall Brawl promo, it's sponsored by the Muscular Dystrophy Association.
Jerry's Kids.
Luger says he's here for one reason, and he's here to take the gold. He's sick and tired of playing with kids. Hogan says, this is the WCW title, and I'm the champ, and that's the way it's going to stay. And when you get in Hulk Hogan's face, you got thousands of Hulkamaniacs just stick, and you got a thousand, he said, when you get in Hulk Hogan's face, he's got 1,000 Hulkamaniacs backing him up. So just stick that stinky hand out and shake my hand, and you'll get a title shot next week in Miami, and a pushing and shoving occurs, and you go back to ringside with Mongo and his rat dog.
Pepe
and Bobby Heenan ex Mongo. If the dog was in the movie Ben, because he looks like a rat.
Oh my god!
And that was the first episode of Nitro. So now,
I want to throw this out there. It was an interesting, you know, element to the story that people didn't know where Luger was at. Was he a good guy or was he a bad guy?
Right, and it just again, it was. Hogan's given now we shift our focus to now everybody's on a high. It's like, oh my god, it's live. It's next week they're in Miami.
Was a solid show. The first show was great. What's next?
Right. So now here we go. Episode 2, Miami, Florida. Here's my notes. I still hate Mongo. Eric Bischoff plugging Hogan.
It's the biggest thing since Where's the Beef? He says.
Yeah, that's when I wrote down on my notes. Phil, I still hate Mongo. I'll save it for you. You'll see it when you come over. Eric Bischoff plugging Hogan Luger, Savage and Norton, and the debut of Sabu.
And they made the announcement that Vader was no longer going to be in the War Games main events.
Right. So now Hogan –
on Hogan's team.
On Hogan's team. Hogan was without a partner now. For the, now the team is one less guy. Vader is AWOL, they said.
And this is when Vader is signed to WWF.
Right. Vader goes back to WWF with Jim Cornette.
Yeah.
Which was a good run, too, for him. They and then you go to commercial break. Sabu – fighting Alex Wright, Das Wunderkind.
And everybody hated Alex Wright because he had this stupid dance.
But he didn't dance tonight.
No, he didn't dance tonight. But I will say this. I have a newfound respect for Alex Wright.
I do too.
His father was like this like amazing professional wrestler. You know, was like a legit wrestler too. I don't recall the name offhand. I apologize for that. And, you know, believe it or not, Alex Wright was actually a New Japan find.
He was. And they mentioned that, too, which was weird. So Sabu's fighting Alex Wright. Of course, Dickface Mongo, again, compares everything to football. Everything. It's annoying.
Well, that's what he knows.
I know. It's annoying, though. I'm comparing Sabu to a tight end. And shut up. Shut up. Shut up and kill yourself. Sabu hits a top rope Hunakanrana. And Dave, I don't know if you noticed this, but he has to tell the ref it's over as he nods to the ref to make the three count.
Oh my God!
Like, right,
this match was just like this was a Sabu match. It was fucking reckless.
It was reckless spots.
It was all over the place. Like I'm sure Alex Wright was like, "What the fuck did I get myself into?" Like, there's like a point where he does get you know, he's on the offense and he hits like a missile dropkick to Sabu out of the ring. But it, regardless of, you know, Alex Wright is a solid wrestler. Like, if you look back to his matches, they're actually pretty good. Even there's like a Starrcade match between him and Jean-Paul Levesque, Triple H's, you know, previous gimmick before he went on to become Triple H. And they had a good match.
Yeah.
The guy's a great wrestler. You wouldn't be in – well, I don't know. There are some guys that were in New Japan that really sucked.
Right, of course.
But regardless, you know, the guy's a good wrestler when you look back on him. But Sabu is Sabu, and he's, you know, hitting some of the most sloppiest, you know, crossbodies, hurricanranas, everything. And he hits him with this kind of strange, like, victory roll, hurricanrana kind of deal onto Alex Wright and gets the three. And, you know, like you said, it was just kind of like this, it's like a botchamania moment.
Yeah. So
the ref,
he makes the Hunakanrana and he has to tell the ref that the match is over. And Nick, you can see him nodding to Nick Patrick, and Nick Patrick makes the three count. And then of course, Sabu being Sabu gets reckless again, starts beating up on him again, gets himself disqualified. They reverse the decision.
Crowd boos.
But, of course, they boo Sabu. And they kept calling him maniac and suicidal. And yes,
well,
we know.
How could I word it? You know, back in the day with a guy like this, because they were putting over, you know, like, hey, he's related to the original Sheik. It's this wild character who it doesn't care if he wins or loses. And they're still playing on that old school mentality that it's not going to matter if the guy gets the three count or not. He's out there to just destroy his opponents. So they're just playing off of the old school, you know, antic of like, it ain't going to matter if the guy wins.
Right.
You know, same thing for Bruiser Brody, same thing for Hanson, same thing for the original Sheik, all those guys, Abdul the Butcher. So they're working off of that.
Right.
And I don't know, the fans are getting different. You know, when you watch Sabu in ECW, he would do all this shit and get the win, which was, you know, kind of like what people were wanting after all these years of seeing these DQ finishes.
Right.
So, you know, Sabu's time in WCW was very brief, to say the least,
because
of stuff like this.
Right, exactly.
And Sabu, you know, if you read more about who the guy actually is, you know, he wasn't going to last long in WCW anyway. He's one of these kind of guys who you know, jumps from promotion to promotion. There was even a problem. He even had an issue in ECW, which led to that.
Him and Taz. Yeah, he went.
Yeah, him and Taz.
He took bookings in Japan and stiffed Paulie.
Yeah, which is Sabu went on to New Japan, and he was the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion. at the time.
Right.
But, you know, Paul Lee wanted him in ECW as well. But that didn't work out. Sabu was gone for like a year. So Taz was calling him out for a year.
Sabu, I'm calling you out. Anyway. Yeah. All right. Commercial break. Mean Gene's back in the ring. Ric Flair cuts a promo. And here's where it gets a little... This is the only part I didn't like about this episode of Nitro besides fucking Mongo. Lex comes out. Like, Luger comes out in the middle of Flair's promo. And, of course, Flair goes bananas. Here's the total package, Hogan. This is what you got to put up with later. 6'5", 275 pounds of the total package. Tell him, package. And then Lex just doesn't know. Lex looks like he wanted to say something, but I guess Rick maybe took some words out of his mouth. That's how it looked.
Yeah.
And he goes, Rick, some things just never change. And he walks out of the ring, and I'm like, what does that mean?
It was awkward, but to Luger's credit, Luger was actually doing pretty well with his promos at the time.
Yeah, for a change.
And he had to put over the fact that, you know, everything was ambiguous, and they were starting to bring up this paranoia, like, is he, you know, on Hogan's side, or is he not? Like,
right,
what's
right.
the deal?
I know, but it was like
this. Go ahead.
It just didn't make any sense. Like, that whole segment didn't make any sense.
Yeah, it was really awkward, and there was like a few things that they were doing something new. All I'm right. sure for Luger, it wasn't comfortable either. But he had to put over the fact that like he wasn't showing to the audience right away whose side he was on.
Exactly. All right,
okay.
I'm sorry. Did you make your point? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, I was just going to repeat myself. So,
so your next match was the U.S. title, VK Walshy versus
Sting.
Nothing really stands out to me. You know, it's for this match anyway, except for Sting's song,
just
the man called Sting. Walshy at this point was like, whatever.
Yeah.
Now he's just Bray Wyatt's father, you know? It's whatever.
I don't know. Well, Mike Rotundo was never really that.
Well, I loved Mike Rotundo in the Varsity Club, and he was with USA Express, and him and Barry Windham, they were a good team. But
yeah.
I just, at this point, it was like, it was like IRS with tits. I just didn't feel it, you know? And then Norton versus Savage. This was okay. Savage given up a lot of weight to Flash.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously Norton's a stiff, strong-style wrestler.
Yeah.
So he's not going to take – I mean, for his credit, he took a couple of bumps from Savage. Savage makes anybody look good in the ring, no matter how bad or good they are.
Norton is going to be hitting him with the, you know, pummeling him and the power moves. Like, he hits him with the power bomb.
Right.
The power slam and stuff like that. And it's, to Savage's credit, you know, he's selling everything. And right. Savage is – just a consummate professional. He's not going to half-ass his performance.
No.
I'll say this about Savage. Like, Savage at this point, it was like him in WCW, I was always thinking, like, what's this guy's problem? And he was with the paranoia, you know, angle with Luger and a lot of things that the guy was doing. It was like, you could tell, like, there was just something up with this guy. I don't know if there was something personal going on in his life or what, but there was just, like, this reality that he was bringing to this character of just being extremely aggressive and extremely paranoid, and it was just kind of like, what the hell's going on with this guy? And whenever he did stuff in the ring, it was just so, how can I say? It was more intense, more aggressive than what we knew of him in the past.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I didn't get that vibe from Savage. That's just how he's been the last couple of years. And that stemmed from him being the commentator in WWF and then being the wrestler and he couldn't decide.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where he was. I guess he wanted to prove himself.
Yeah. And you know, look at it this way, you know, he wanted to continue being a wrestler and he was having these issues in WWF and then he comes to WCW, but he's still not the top guy. Hogan's still in his way.
Right. The match was okay.
Yeah. The ending was interesting to say the least. I liked it just because it was something new. Like, the Dungeon of Doom is running in there to get Savage, and Shark is so fat that he falls on Norton's legs, and Savage hits him with the three, with the flying elbow and gets the three, which I think it, to Norton's credit, you know, I think this is like the only way that you probably could get a straight three count on the dude, because
he's that big and he's comparing.
They had to keep him strong. They had to, they couldn't have Savage get a clean win on this guy.
That's what you call good booking, boys and girls.
Yeah. So I know for a lot of people, they would probably argue, well, how come the ref doesn't say, like, hey, Shark's on his legs? You can't count that as a, you know, as a real pinfall. But it's wrestling. It's entertainment.
Right.
It's just they want fans to argue about this shit.
Right. And so now we're hype. Now you just – it's the home stretch now.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan versus Lex Luger for the world title. Again, not
and
a
we
big...
were. I'll throw this out real quick. We weren't accustomed to, you know, watching a show one week and two guys like yelling at each other, and then next week we were going to get a world title match. That was kind of
old schoolish. Yeah, that's
no. We weren't used to getting, like, this was like the instant gratification kind of deal going on. Like, right. Obviously, this was going to be a start of many Nitros where there wasn't a definite winner, but we weren't used to getting like a world title match like immediately after two guys just met each other, you know?
Right. Normally it'd be like a build up, but it had that old school feel to it.
Oh yeah.
Just a bunch of power moves. At one point, Luger had the rack for a it was almost like Luger had him up. Luger had Hogan in the rack almost as long as he had Flair in the rack at that bash that he was, you know, with the blood and all that.
Yeah.
So it was that kind of vibe. And, of course, Luger thinks he wins the match. He drops Hogan.
Because the ref, you know, raises Hogan's arm because, you know, Hogan's knocked out at this point. And
Luger goes for a pin. Obviously, Hogan kicks out, does his asthma attack. Does his comeback with the breathing and the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
And
I thought this was interesting, which I found kind of funny because this was, you know, the beginning of, you know, you mentioned on the first Nitro, Mongo was like playing off like he couldn't name the competition. But this time around they were, which was kind of strange. They got their facts like completely wrong. They said about Luger, he's like, you know, he was the champion of the WWF, but, you know, barely made it past mid-level status in WCW, which was actually kind of the opposite. Like,
stupid.
He didn't make it past mid-level status in WWF, but he was the champion in WCW beforehand.
Please.
And
please.
I thought it was hilarious that they said, like, Bischoff said Luger's not used to this caliber of competition. And then, like, right after that, that's when he gets Hogan in the rack.
Right. And, you know, so Bischoff's trying. First of all, again, and not because I hate Mongo, but his interaction with Bobby Heenan,
Bobby the Stain,
right? His
or Bobby Hernia.
First of all, I understand his role of being the good color guy against the bad color guy. I get it. It's been going on for years. I get it. But it's so he sounded so phony, and Bobby Heenan is a natural. Bobby Heenan epitomized color commentating.
Heenan was out of his element, it seemed like.
Of course he was, because he's dealing with a fucking amateur. You know, Eric...
an amateur. It just seemed like, especially in WCW, like, it just seemed like he never got his footing into it. And, you know, part of that is, you know, the guy chose to be a part of WCW because there was... because of the money, because of the health benefits, which was...
I understand.
Unusual for these guys, but you know, sometimes when you go for the money and you go for the glory and all that kind of stuff, you take out the passion. And once you take out that passion, it's like the dude was fucking soulless on these shows.
I gotta disagree, because the stuff he did with Schiavone and Dusty was gold. I'm sorry, the stuff he did with Schiavone.
I don't know about that. I hardly remember any of that stuff,
dude. You gotta watch. I'm telling you,
I was the biggest WCW fan. I could I. You couldn't pay me to remember any
I'm
of
not,
the stuff.
I'm not comparing. I'm not comparing Bobby Heenan's run in the E because it's way better, obviously, because he had Gorilla Monsoon.
It was two different things,
obviously. But I'm telling you, it's like Mongo was color commentary cancer. He was Triple C, you know, and he was just like it was so. It came off phony. You know what I'm saying? Like it was. Never mind. All right. So either way. Dungeon of Doom.
I disagree.
We're going to agree to disagree. Dungeon of Doom comes in, breaks up. Like you mentioned before,
this is the onset of all the Nitro DQ main events.
No one attacked Lex Luger. Sting got attacked. Sting made the save. Savage and Hogan got attacked.
Yeah.
So now they clear the ring, and now the pushing and shoving commences. Mean Gene gets in the ring again. Come on, guys, what's going on? And, of course, here it is. You know, how come nobody attacked you? So now, of course, Sting intervenes and sticks up for his boys. Like, no. Lex, you know, Lex was doing the right thing. And, you know, he had nothing to do with it. And Lex was, to his credit, was playing off. Like, hey, listen, man, I'm just trying to help out. You know, I was right place, right time type of thing. Savage, of course, agreeing with Hogan, why didn't they attack you? They attacked me. They attacked Hogan. Why didn't they attack you? Nobody knows why. I don't trust them. I don't like them. And this goes back and forth until Jimmy Hart intervenes and says, you know, hey, listen, guilty till proven innocent. We're down one guy for this War Games coming up on Sunday. Make him the next guy. And they were just like, nah. And, of course, they made Hogan the deciding factor because Sting wanted him, Savage didn't, and Hogan agreed to it, and that was the forming now of Hogan's team, him of the total package replacing Vader,
which works out because if they had Vader on the team, it wasn't going to work out with the storyline that was happening.
Right.
So this worked to their advantage, and the Luger element was
genius.
It was genius because I was watching an episode today where the Dungeon of Doom attacks Savage again, and they choke slam him. Like the big thing was like Hogan's neck was broken by the Giant's choke slam, and he was choke slamming the shit out of everybody. So who's next? It's Macho Man. And then Luger just, like, walks out, and it just seems so obvious that Luger's going to turn heel on Savage.
Yeah.
Then he walks over to Savage, and, you know, he's about to lift him up, and it just seems like, you know, okay, the guy's going to go heel, he's going to attack Savage, clear as day, and then the Giant chokeslams Luger.
Right, right.
So the storytelling that was going on was, like... It was brilliant. It just kept people hooked, you know, wanting to watch the next episode of Nitro, despite the American Males debut.
American Males.
And they won the tag titles on their debut match.
Didn't they fight the next episode? Didn't Johnny B. Badd fight Paul Orndorff?
Yes.
But again, revolutionary. It started what the young kids know as the Attitude Era. A lot of our fans that listen, you know, on a download, we get feedback all the time, and they're only 20 years old, so all they know is the Attitude Era.
Yeah, because the shit was, well, the second episode of Nitro that we're just talking about now, today's the actual 19th anniversary.
Right, today's the 19th anniversary.
Episode.
Right, next year is the 20th anniversary of the second episode of Nitro.
Well, the 20th anniversary of all of this.
Right.
Next year.
Fathom that for a minute. And
eat that in.
Yeah, take it all in. It was that kind of party, man. It was, you know, it was awesome for its time. I enjoyed it, and you enjoyed it as a kid, and most of our fans.
And we still enjoy it.
Yeah, I had a ball watching this. I even tolerated Hogan. I just hated Mongo. I loved, you know, the Flair stuff, and I loved, of course, I love Paul Orndorff, you know that, but
yeah,
I just, you know, again, this was the start of something wonderful, and we all knew that big things were happening. Like, you knew. You didn't even, I mean, the rivalry was like, okay, here you go. Here's the new guy. He'll go step on some toes. No one knew this was going to take off like it did a year later. So, I mean.
And it didn't matter that there was a monster truck match. None of that stuff.
Oh, don't even get
none
me started.
Of the corny stuff mattered.
That
it's just like
shit Halloween Havoc. Don't even get me started.
Oh, the pay-per-views were, some of them were really atrocious, like Uncensored, the first Uncensored, which I believe was 96.
Yeah.
That was, that had the three-tier cage with, you know, Hogan and Savage against the world.
Yeah, wow.
And some of that stuff was really bad, but the Nitros were really good. The Saturday Nights were really good.
I enjoyed those the most. I love WCW Saturday Night.
But this was like the dynamic that people had to deal with. It was WCW was getting known for their great undercard.
Yeah, the best undercards ever.
The best undercard ever. Main events were so-so. People were getting drawn into the main events mainly because of the story. And WWF, on the other hand, undercard was atrocious. But the main events were out of this world.
Yeah, and WWE wasn't, you know.
Except for King Mabel and Diesel.
Yeah, that was unwatchable. It was.
Well, Kevin Nash as Diesel as champion, that was.
I hate Kevin Nash.
He's like one of the worst drawing champions of all time, so. God,
I remember when he beat Backlund in the Garden, it was like 9 seconds. And I got a call. My buddy Kenny. My buddy Kenny was at the Garden, and he went. We were at my friend's house. Watching tapes of Nitro, calls me. Not Nitro. We're watching tapes of Lucha. I'm sorry, we're watching Lucha tapes, and he calls me from the Garden on a payphone. Goes, yo, man, Diesel just beat Bob Backlund in 9 seconds from a payphone. They don't even have fucking payphones anywhere. Anymore.
They do, but they're like monitored by the police now.
Probably.
And homeless people use them to make phone calls to somebody, whoever. Yeah.
Whoever they call.
Homeless people know.
Even homeless people have friends, dude. Either way.
They got to get their hookups.
Yeah, man.
Fucking coke or whatever.
But we could save Kevin Nash from the hot. Yeah, Tony C's saying I can go straight to hell for my hate for Mongo.
You can go straight to hell for hating Mongo.
I can, probably. I probably will. Hey, I didn't shit on Hogan this episode, and I hate Hogan.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. They were doing different stuff with Hogan. And,
I enjoyed WCW Hogan. I liked it.
He was still getting cheesy, you know. Don't get me wrong. Like
that's Hogan.
They had Hogan with the Phantom of the Opera mask holding the sword and shit.
Yeah,
like
Pasta Mania running wild, brother.
It was still corny, but they were including him on some like groundbreaking stuff, like the whole paranoia angle. That was new.
See, Mr. X said it too. WWE was unwatchable. It was unwatchable.
Like yeah, it was. It was garbage. So, but
now this is WCW. This is where the big boys play. That's the tagline, and it was revolutionary to say the least.
Yeah, and they were you know, not too long. I think like either this year or the following year, they started having Hogan job to Flair and job to Arn Anderson. That was unheard of. Like, you know, Hogan wasn't losing to these guys. Yeah. And if he was going to lose to them, it wasn't going to be by pinfall, but it was starting to happen. Like Hogan was realizing, like, you know, regardless of how resistant Hogan was to change, he knew he had to do something different.
All right. Any closing thoughts while we start taking this train into the station?
I said everything I possibly could.
All right, guys, a couple of programming notes. Tomorrow night on The Rant, they're going to have website and social media coverage of NXT TakeOver at 8 p.m. Night of Champions, I'll be on the pre-show with the boys. Maybe you will, too, if you're around.
So I'm curious about my man Black Hammer's, Tony C's, thoughts on NXT.
Oh, Tony C hopefully will be involved tomorrow with the Rant crew. Coming up this Saturday, you can hear Tony C with Mr. Will I Am Morgan and Rage for the Wrestling Call-In Show. If you obviously, if you heard last night, Surfer and his antics, there should be a show for What Are You Reading this Sunday. And you know, new Shining Wizards came out yesterday, and you know, a lot of stuff coming out, man. Just be on the lookout for it. I want to give a shout out to. A buddy, Adam Henning, from the Midnight Jury. He made a big pun reference last night.
What happened?
I was listening to episode 49, and they were talking about WCW from 2000. The shit, I've got the fucking pay-per-view already.
Greed?
No, well, I don't know if it was Greed. I forget what it was already. Holy shit, I'm sorry. But he said, like, I'm not a player. He made a big pun reference. And Mike fucking ragged on him. It was so funny. It was funny. So, Adam, this one's for you. And that's what we're going to wrap up with tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, we are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. You know how to get in touch with us. Shining Wizards Network, RantEmRadio.com, NXT Cast, Bloke Show, Geeks of the Industry, Mega Pals Radio. Everybody, support all the shows. Dave, anything?
Hasta la vista and vaya con Dios.
Word. All right, guys, thanks for hanging out with us tonight. Be back next week with Little Egypt, another kick-ass throwback. And hopefully Dave won't have any more computer problems.
Hopefully my computer doesn't break down. I'm surprised it lasted this long.
Guys, God bless. Take care of each other. Don't get arrested. Avoid the clap.
And kiss your mother.
And go kiss mom, Dukes. All right?
Yeah, she needs a kiss.
And fuck Mongo. Good night. I'll rip my prick through your hooters, I'm sick. You couldn't measure my dick for 6 footers. Hold up, true lie, I'm all about getting low. But I knock that bull, if you out to get bull. I'm not a player, I just fuck a lot. Uptown, baby. Buchanan, the black brand, relax. I don't discriminate. I regulate every shade of the ass. Don't get your show class and pass my test. Fat ass and breasts. Highly intelligent bachelorettes. That's the best. I won't settle for less. I want to get a brunette with a forgettable sex. I lay your head on my chest. I feel my heartbeat. Rick and Park, the Jeep.